Thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I'd like to inform all parties today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now to turn the conference over to Jasmine Blackwell. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you and good morning. My name is Jasmine Blackwell, and I'm the media contact for today's Hurricane Outlook mid-season update. Before we get started, I would like to go over a few housekeeping items. Today, you will hear from Matthew Rosenkranz, lead seasonal hurricane forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will deliver NOAA's updated 2022 Atlantic hurricane season outlook. Mr. Rosenkranz and his team update the seasonal hurricane outlook initially issued in May each year in early August as the peak months of the season get underway. You will be able to find a news release and graphics related to today's call posted to NOAA.gov momentarily. And following Mr. Rosenkranz's remarks, you will have the opportunity to ask questions about the outlook. If you have any additional questions about the outlook, please contact me at jasmine.blackwell@noaa.gov. That's jasmine.blackwell@noaa.gov, or by phone at 202-841-9184. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Matt to deliver the updated outlook.
Thank you, Jasmine. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's announcement. The Atlantic hurricane season officially extends from the 1st of June through the end of November. So far this season, there have been three named storms in the Atlantic Basin, and we are now entering the peak months of the Atlantic hurricane season, August through October. Historically, this is when about 90% of all Atlantic tropical cyclone activity occurs, which is why we use an updated outlook early in August. Now to the updated 2020 outlook. Atmospheric and oceanic conditions still favor an above normal 2022 Atlantic hurricane season. We have slightly decreased the chances from an above average season from 65% down to 60%. The likelihood of near normal activity has now risen from 25% to 30%, while the chances remain at 10% for a below normal season. We are now predicting likely ranges of tropical storm and hurricane activity to be 14 to 20 named storms, of which 6 to 10 could become hurricanes, and 3 to 5 of those could become major hurricanes. Major hurricanes are those hurricanes which reach Category 3, 4, or 5 on the Saffir-Simpson scale. These ranges take into account the three named storms that have already formed this season. Please keep in mind that NOAA's hurricane season outlook is a general guide to the overall seasonal activity and does not specifically predict landfalling storms. This is because landfalls are largely predictable within about 1 week of a storm potentially reaching a coastline. So, behind the outlook, there are several climate factors that we observed and analyzed when updating our outlook that contributed to our prediction for the active hurricane season. One of them is that in July, NOAA declared that La Nina is favored to remain in place for the rest of 2022. La Nina conditions can enhance Atlantic hurricane activity due to weakening vertical wind shear and also changing the vertical stability, which supports the genesis of more and stronger hurricanes. Additionally, this summer we are observing weaker Atlantic trade winds, an active West African monsoon, and periodically above normal Atlantic sea surface temperatures in the main development region of the tropical Atlantic. All of those are signals for an above average hurricane season and are reflective of the ongoing high activity era for Atlantic hurricanes that has favored more active hurricane season since 1995. While the tropics have been relatively quiet over the last month, remember that it only takes one landfalling storm to devastate a community. This is especially critical as we head into what the team here at NOAA anticipates is likely to be a busy peak to the season. So now is the time to know your risk, develop a plan, and be prepared for potential tropical storms or hurricanes ahead. For helpful preparedness tips, visit FEMA's ready.gov or listo.gov in Spanish. And lastly, in recent years, we've seen the threats from hurricanes expand beyond damaging winds and dangerous storm surge to torrential rains and inland flooding, threatening life and property far from the initial landfall locations. If you are in a region prone to inland flooding, stay tuned to the National Hurricane Center for the latest watches and warnings, and be sure to adhere to advice from your local emergency managers during a storm should evacuation be necessary in your area. And now, I'll be happy to take questions about the outlook.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly. If you need to withdraw your questions, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. It'll take a few moments for the questions to come through. Please stand by.
As a reminder, at this time, Matt Rosenkranz, lead seasonal hurricane forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, will take questions about NOAA's 2022 mid-season hurricane outlook update. If you have any questions that are not related to the outlook, please reach out to me following the call. I will now hand it back over to the operator to facilitate the question and answer portion of this call.
And our first question is from Seth. Go ahead, your line's open.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Seth, for the time at the Associated Press. Can you go through the reasons why it is a slight decrease in the chances of above average season, and the decrease in the high range for both majors and main storms? You know, instead of 14 to 20 or 21, you're looking 14 to 20, and instead of 3 to 6, I guess 3 to 5. Is it the sea surface temperature? Is it
So I don't know if you're breaking up on your end or it's me on my end. It was a little hard to hear you. But the main reason why we decreased the values there is we've seen a bit of more variability in the sea surface temperatures in the Atlantic. There's been a bit of cooler water that has kind of come in from the extra tropical Atlantic and is impacting into some of the main development regions of the Atlantic. So initially in May, sea surface temperatures were forecast to be above normal. Now they're forecast to be closer to normal with only kind of periods of above normal. So that can kind of mitigate some of the activity in the season. Additionally, some of the low-level winds that are bring the inflow into the West African monsoon, they're progressing northward slightly slower than last year. Although last year was the third busiest on record. So we have some very interesting baselines with the last year being the third busiest and 2 years ago being the busiest on record in terms of number of named storms. So being a little behind last year isn't so bad. It just brings us a little bit closer to normal.
Our next question is from Brian Sullivan from Bloomberg News. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for doing this. I was going to ask you the same question that Seth did, but I'll ask you a different one. Of the things that you guys are looking at, is there one that's more concerning to you as we head into the heart of the season here, or are they all kind of equal weighted?
The sea surface temperatures in the Atlantic being, closer to normal, which means you might have periods, a week or two where they are slightly below normal. And that can kind of tamp down on activity, even if the basin itself is still more favorable. That was one of the ones that really kind of caught the team's eye and our attention to making it be a little bit, backing off of that higher end.
Is there anything concerning?
Concerning as far as, not really. I mean, yeah. most of our model tools and our statistical tools still point to near to above normal for the season.
Okay. Thanks.
Our next question is from Rebecca Hersher from NPR. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hi, thanks for doing this. Can you give a little more detail about the sea surface temperature situation, what's been happening over the last couple of months, and what you're expecting in, during peak hurricane season?
Sure. So over the entire North Atlantic, including the extratropics, is still above normal for sea surface temperatures, but we have noticed a really persistent patch of below normal sea surface temperatures kind of extending from off the coast of Portugal southwest down towards the Greater Antilles. And some of that does extend down toward the main developer region. But those anomalies are between 0 and 1/4 of a degree below normal. Then there's a large area of above normal sea surface temperatures kind of off the west coast of Africa and extends across some of the southern parts of the main developer region, wraps up towards the Gulf of Mexico. So an average, the main development region that we look to that has the predictability and the signals for the tropical cyclones during August and October is largely above normal, but there's periods where it might be kind of below normal. So that can kind of tamp down on, you know, say a wave comes off Africa and it runs into some of those below normal sea surface temperatures for that week. It may not develop as fast or may not develop as much as it could have if it had, you know, much warmer waters. In the past 4 weeks, we have seen a bit of warming of the main development region, a bit of cooling of the oceans out from kind of Cuba northeast, kind of running along about 30 degrees north over towards the kind of Canary Islands, and then a significant warming of the ocean further north of that from off the coast of Florida up towards the west coast of Europe. So there are some dynamic changes in the Atlantic sea surface temperatures. La Nina is still going strong in the Pacific, and there's actually been some cooling in the regions where we monitor for La Nina. So that's getting more back into that really favorable state where La Nina can really enhance tropical cyclone activity in the Atlantic.
Our next question is from Matt Chase. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hey there, good morning. Thanks for doing this. I got two questions for you. First, how granularly can you forecast hurricane season for the New York, Long Island area? And two, I apologize if you said this, the call was coming in and out for me, but how many named storms do you forecast that there's going to be for the remainder of the season, and what date does that extend to?
Sure. The forecast does not have any information for specific geographical regions besides the Atlantic hurricane, the entire Atlantic basin. We don't do any landfall or specific, you know, just part of the basin where storms might come impact New York. There's no information like that included. We've already had 3 named storms. We are forecasting 14 to 20, so that means we'd have 11 to 17 for the remainder of this year. And that goes through the end of November, November 30th.
And how does that compare to what you said in May?
In May, we had 14 to 21 named storms, so we just took one off the top end.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Next question is from Sam Walker. Go ahead, your line's open.
Thanks, Sam Walker, WOBX.com. How much is the Saharan dust plume playing into what you're looking at as far as the data this year? Is that something that's a short-term, really not something that you can use as a way to do your predictions? Or is that something that you can look at as a long-term solution, or I say long-term data point?
So Saharan air layer typically peaks in July, whereas the hurricane season peaks in August, September, actually really peaks in September. So there's a bit of an offset peak. Truly, the Saharan air layer can play a larger role in some of the early season formations, kind of really hampering some of those. But once you get to the core of the season, the Saharan air layer is much less of a factor as far as how many storms form, because you don't get an outbreak every single week. You don't get an outbreak of Saharan air layer every week. So it's kind of on and off throughout the season. So it's not really something you can use to predict the season as a whole. It's more related to individual storms in shorter periods.
How much has things changed where we're seeing more, you know, quick name? We saw that here early season with a system that formed off our coast on the Outer Banks that ended up, you know, getting a name and then almost as quickly losing that status. And I know this is more probably directed toward NHC than it is towards you guys at Climate Prediction, but how much is that affecting your forecast as a whole? I mean, are we seeing the data being able to name storms or get the data that confirms these are going to be named storms, and that therefore raises the amount of named and hurricane and et cetera?
Sure. So the latest research is that what we call shorties, storms that form and then are not, and then develop tropical status and lose tropical status within 48 hours, contributes about 2 named storms per year. And that's when we look on the record going back to the mid-70s when we had the, you know, started to have really good satellite coverage. And it's really that good satellite coverage via the new technology scatterometers, the recently launched GOES satellites that really give us minute-by-minute imagery, the hurricane hunters being able to fly more missions with better technology and much better sensors on the aircraft, so we can identify more of these storms that maybe should have been identified in the past, but we're not. But we are catching them now. And it's about 2 named storms a year it's responsible for.
Thanks.
Next question is from Robert Connors. Go ahead. Your line's open.
Thank you very much. Robert Connors, LakeWalesNews.net. I have a question regarding the Bermuda High, excuse me, which seems anomalously strong and broad this year to a casual observer. It seems it's a little farther displaced to the west or expanded to the west. I wonder, that has depressed the initial storms far to the south, along the coast of Venezuela even, we saw. Unusually, and there seems to also be a very, very active monsoon season in the American Southwest, and I wonder if there's a connection. Is this part of a global pattern note that you've seen? Is there anything that says that there's a little bit of a different pattern this year than in past years?
Yeah, so I have noted, and in the outlook, we do reference the position of the subtropical ridge, Bermuda High, and its relationship to the sea level pressure over the Atlantic, and generally when that Bermuda High does have that extension to the west and or is shifted north, you lower sea level pressures in the tropical Atlantic, and that is favorable for tropical cyclone formation. So that's kind of another one of the factors that went into us keeping this above average outlook. The flow into the southwest and the monsoon is very highly correlated with the number of tropical cyclones and the frequency of those that are in the East Pacific. And the East Pacific has been quite active to this date. They're running about 40% above normal in the East Pacific. I do think that is related to some circulation changes that happened with the La Nina, kind of early in the season, where the core portions of La Nina and the coolest sea surface temperatures were quite a bit further shifted to the west, almost out completely out to the dateline, and that kind of will change the global circulation pattern. Is that directly responsible? That's something we would have to look at the end of the season and do some attribution model runs and exactly see where that sea surface temperature pattern that we observed this year, would that create this downstream pattern, you know, 100 out of 101 times, you know, so frequently that we could say that sea surface temperature did create this pattern at a statistically significant level.
All right. Thank you. And one follow-up question, to what extent, and this may not be relevant directly to your agency, but to what extent are the new robotic sail equipment and the drones expected to play in forecasting accuracy this year?
While we do love our research partners in the sail drones technology, the exact amount that will play in this year is something I could probably have Jasmine follow up with the Oceanic Research, Office of Atmospheric and Oceanic Research Group, because they run that program.
All right. Thank you very much.
Next question is from Mark Shelfstein. Go ahead, your line's open.
I'm going to go back to the Saharan dust. Any chance that the dust falling out from that large area would have some effect on water temperatures in any ways, either albedo or something else, or is it just too little dust to really worry about?
There are some research papers that point to the dust outbreaks increasing albedo and keeping some of the sea surface temperatures cooler. That can be relatively short-lived, as solar heating to change the sea surface temperature really does only penetrate down, millimeters or inches in depth. Within the week or two that an outbreak would be over an area, because the outbreak does kind of shift west and keep going with the winds, right? It doesn't just stay there for months on end. So it could temporarily do it, but it wouldn't do it for the entire season or even a month.
Okay. And a quick follow-up. Deep water heat in the Gulf of Mexico from the loop current, does that play a role in your predictions, and what are you seeing for the rest of the year for that?
Yeah, so the loop current, because it kind of is on and off, you'll get a warm eddy, then you get a cool eddy and a warm eddy, and you'll get multiples of those during a season. It's not something we directly use as a predictor.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is Unki Sanu. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hello, this is Unki Sanu from the Martha's Vineyard Times. I'm just wondering if you may go a little bit into how the outlook says will impact the New England area, more specifically for the Cape and Islands, towns such as places around Martha's Vineyard and whatnot.
Yeah, there's no information in here specifically on where storms will go during the season, but definitely being on some, the more vulnerable you are to an impact from a storm, the more preparations you should take now. So it's quiet now, so I urge people to really start preparing for the hurricane season for should the storm come up that way.
All right, thank you.
Next question is from Alex Forbes. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hey, good morning. I wanted to ask about the comparison that's often made between seasons, and if you could speak a little bit to why, the general public's perception might be thrown off thinking that this season is a slow season comparing it to 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, it's actually something in the team we made sure we looked at, because we do look at past years. So 2021 did have a lull period in July, and the end of July to August. And then after August 11th, from there until the end of September, we had on average 2.4 tropical storms form every single week. So we had five storms up through the early part of July. We had Hurricane Elsa form actually in June, and kind of was there. Then we had a 30-day lull period, and from about early July until August 11th. Then Tropical Storm Fred formed, and then it was about two storms a week, maybe two and a half storms a week. Some weeks had three, all the way until the end of September. So you can get very active years with these kind of lulls in them. 2019 had the same thing. They had a 31-day kind of lull period and ended up with 18 named storms at the end of the year, which would be right in the middle of our forecast range. 2020 being the most active year on record with 30 named storms was just kind of rapid fire all season. So those things have kind of definitely shifted kind of perceptions. So the team here, we're kind of careful to make sure our numbers are really solid and based over the long term rather than just looking at the last 1 or 2 years.
Thanks. Next question is from Emily Foxhall. Go ahead. Your line's open.
Hi. I have a question related to that. I saw that having three storms so far this year was near average or average, and I wondered if you were predicting to have had more storms by now, and if the reason we haven't is all that you've mentioned so far, or there's anything additionally that you've seen.
No, we weren't expecting to have more storms early in the season because there's, you know, being right at normal, the most of our forecast tools and analytical methods do focus on August and September and October, because that's when, you know, about 90% of all your tropical storm activity happens in the Atlantic. So we really try and focus on grabbing that 90% of that's where any of the predictable signal is.
Next question from Zach Covey. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hey, thank you. I had a quick question kind of about that central Atlantic cold pool that's coming in. You know, typically when you see that with a warming MDR, you're increasing the instability across the Atlantic, which in turn can drive, you know, the development of tropical cyclone genesis. But at the same time, you can also increase frontal boundaries, which can increase wind shear. In that type of a situation, when you see that cold pool developing now, do you lean one way versus the other towards increased instability or increased wind shear, and how does that play a role into the, you know, forecast that you've made?
So the instability and the north-south temperature gradient, that's not a direct predictor in our models. The sea surface temperature anomalies is a direct predictor, and the wind shear are direct predictor methods that we use. Because once you get to a certain temperature in the ocean, you know, 26 degrees, you really don't, it's really supportive generally of tropical cyclone activity, and the shear can be your kind of discriminant factor as far as whether something develops. So we pay more attention to the raw sea surface temperatures, not the gradient, and we pay more attention to the shear as predicted in the models.
Perfect. Thank you.
Next question is from Tom Verland. Go ahead. Your line's open.
Yeah, I got two questions. First, how much does the Gulf Stream play in your prediction factors, and have you noticed a lot of movement with the Gulf Stream? And also, how long do you think La Nina is going to have an effect on the weather, if you can even say that, because I know it can hang around for years, so I was just curious.
Sure. The Gulf Stream itself is not a factor in the predictors. There's no, I don't have like a Gulf Stream index or analysis that directly uses any measurements of the Gulf Stream. We use the sea surface temperatures in the Atlantic as a whole, and the Atlantic as the main development in the main development region, as well as the other predictors I mentioned, such as shear and West African monsoon strength. So the Gulf Stream does not play a direct role. For La Nina, there is a 62% chance of it maintaining its maintaining La Nina strength through the August, September, October period for the peak of the hurricane season. And then for longer term, La Nina is the most dominant, single most forecast category all the way out through December, January, February of into early 2023.
Thank you.
Our next question from Michael Phillips. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hi, this is Michael Phillips from weatherboy.com. I had some follow-up questions on the dust that you raised. First, is the amount of dust and dry air over the Atlantic now, is that an anomalous volume or pretty typical? You mentioned July is typically the peak, but I'm wondering how that relates to normal. And does the presence of that dusty dry air take the volume and intensity of storms out of the season completely, or does it just delay their inevitable development? And then lastly, how significant is the Saharan dry dusty layer in terms of NOAA's forecast? Is it significant or just a minor player in the scheme of things?
So let me make sure I got all three of them. I don't have at my fingertips right now a normal amount of Saharan air versus how much we're seeing now. I don't have that number, but I could work with the research partners at the Atmospheric and Oceanic and Atlantic Oceanic and Meteorological Laboratory in Florida, who does the main tracking of that. That's another lab within NOAA. The Saharan air layer, yes, it does peak in July, and it can tamp down on some formations, but we also haven't seen a lot of these stronger African easterly waves kind of come off of Africa and run into that. So we haven't really had that interplay this year to even know or to even see have seen that phenomena this year. And then as far as the seasonal forecast overall, it's not actually a factor in the seasonal forecast because most of your hurricane activity in the Atlantic does happen after most of your dust outbreaks. So they're not truly aligned. It's really only an early season output. So it can really, and normally in June and July, we only have three named storms. On average, less than one hurricane in a year in June and July. So I'm not really going to use something that really has such a small portion of the predictability of the signal and to the overall outlook.
Again, as a reminder, please press star 1 on your phone and record your name if you have a question. Our next question is from Ivan. Go ahead. Your line's open. Ivan, your line might be muted.
Hey, guys. No, thanks for doing this. Basically, same questions as far as the SAL, so that has been answered. Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question is from Jenny. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hi, this is Jenny Stiletovich. Yeah, I just wondered if you could break out the conditions that led to the start, that made the start of the season average. Was it predominantly the Saharan dust? Was it the La Nina or what?
We haven't really done a specific attribution for this year. That's something you kind of do at the end of the season. So I can look and tell you right now that the sea surface temperatures for the last week were kind of below normal in a lot of the main development region of the Atlantic. Little pockets of above normal, but mostly below normal. So therefore, we really haven't had those good clusters of thunderstorms. But it would really need to do a post-season analysis of it where you look at all the factors once you have all the data. And so can't really answer for June and July already yet.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
Again, as a reminder, please press star 1 on your phone and record your name if you have a question. Our next question is from Travis Herzog. Go ahead, your line's open.
Yes, let's talk about comparisons to 2013. 2013 was one of the biggest seasonal busts in recent memory when we were expecting 7 to 11 hurricanes, and I think we ended up with maybe two. Are you seeing any similarities in your statistical predictors to 2013? What's similar and what's different? And could this season go that route?
We are not seeing similarities to 2013. I do have it on my screen right now. That was a neutral phase for ENSO. And the sea surface temperatures were, if I looked at those, they were still a little bit above normal. So the fact that we have the La Nina ongoing right now, we do have slightly warmer sea surface temperature in the Atlantic than we even had then. There was quite a bit of shear that year, so there's a lot of mid-latitude activity that in 2013 that kind of impacted and really did increase the shear there. So all the analogs that I have did not pull out 2013 as an analog year. And I kind of look at those from sea surface temperature in the Atlantic, temperatures in the Pacific, wind shear, and then kind of look through all those kind of lenses at these years. And I don't see nothing I have that matched 2013 at all.
Thank you.
I show no further questions at this time. Again, as a reminder, please press star 1 on your phone and record your name if you have a question. One moment, please. Our next question is from Travis. Go ahead, your line's open.
Yeah, one follow-up question. Do you factor into your predictive, your statistical predictors, how long the duration of the ENSO phase that we're in, you know, a first-year La Nina versus a second-year La Nina versus a third-year La Nina? Does that play into your predictions at all?
No, that is not.
Okay, thank you.
I show no further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you so much. This will conclude our press briefing today. You can find the news release and related graphics from today's call on NOAA.gov. And if there are any additional questions, please contact me by email at jasmine.blackwell@noaa.gov. That's J-A-S-M-I-N-E. blackwell@noaa.gov or by phone at 202-841-9184. Thank you again for joining us today.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please allow a moment of silence and stand by for your post-conference.